haven't had a chance to welcome you today, then welcome. And again, happy Mother's Day for those for whom it is appropriate. And if you forgot to ring your mother, you've still got a couple of hours. It's my pleasure to preach for the first time on this in this series on Ecclesiastes. It's a great series. It's a wonderful series. And in many ways, it's a tough book. It wrestles with a lot of things. It's actually, Rob was sharing with me the other day, and I said, I'm into it. This is one of the toughest books to preach from. It's a tough book. And today's passage is probably one of the most famous passages in the whole of the book of Ecclesiastes. You've probably heard it before if you've been to any number of funerals. It's often read at funerals. But there's another reason why you may have heard of this. And I actually think this reading is so good, this reading from Ecclesiastes, that we should read it a second time. But maybe we should use a different form of media this time. For some of you, this will be a wonderful flashback. For the rest of you, you are going to go, what the? Thank you. Don't you love the little square glasses? They were probably green, but it's a bit hard to know with black and white, you know. But I can imagine, and the haircuts, and the choreography in the background. It's just classic. It's just, and I actually I remember when I first heard it and went, oh my goodness, this is word for word from Ecclesiastes. How incredible is that, to actually take a Bible passage word for word and put it in a pop song? It actually makes me wonder what you could have also done. Maybe the Ten Commandments to Twist and Shout or something like that. I don't know. Maybe the genealogy of Jesus to She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah. Mind-boggling what you could possibly do. But on a more serious note, this is actually a beautiful piece of poetry. It's just a wonderful piece of writing, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. If you've got it there in front of you, it would be good to look along with me. It begins in verse 1 with, "There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven." Every activity under heaven, the vastness of humanity and human experience, there is a time and there is a season, the teacher says. In many ways, though, we need to understand that it's referring to the vastness of human experience, humanity's experience, not individuals' experiences. Because for some people, they won't experience all these times as they were. For instance, imagine a child born during war who sadly dies during war, knows the time of war but not the time of peace. But combined, humanity knows times of war and times of peace. And what we see in these next seven verses, are 14 couplets. That is, these extremes. And have a look at these wonderful descriptions with me. Verses 2 to 4 seem to be quite personal. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. Can you see the extremes there? A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn. Time to dance. They're very personal, aren't they? They're the extremes, and they incorporate everything in between those two extremes. They're the big ticket items, as it were. Life, death, mourning, dancing. Then you see in verses 5 to 6 that they're a little bit more activity-based. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace, a time to refrain. A time to search, a time to give up. A time to keep, a time to throw away. Just as a matter of interest, if you have any idea what the first part of verse 5 means, write a book, because not anyone really knows what it means. The scholars are completely divided over it, and it gives you something to talk about over supper. Then in verses 7 to 8, I guess in many ways a little bit more relationship focused. A time to tear and a time to mend, and I don't think that's talking about sowing. Time to be silent, a time to speak, a time of love, a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. Beautiful, isn't it? Just succinct. No wonder it's so often read at funerals. No wonder this is one of the more well-known parts of the book of Ecclesiastes. And yet, I wonder, did you hear almost the onslaught, the relentless onslaught of these times and these seasons? I think it actually gets picked up a little bit in that song. Turn, 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 turn. They just keep coming at you, one after the other. Throughout human history, there is a time to die and a time to be born, a time to dance and a time to mourn, a time to weep. Time for this, a time for that, a time for this, a time for that, and it just keeps coming at you. Like waves crashing against a cliff face, they just keep coming. A time, a time, a time, a time, a time. It's like this relentless onslaught, and it's like we can do nothing about this time that just keeps coming. And it's actually further seen in verses 9 to 11, and I actually wonder if you can hear the almost voice of surrender by the teacher. Verse 9, what does the worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on men and women. He's made everything beautiful in His time. He's also set eternity into the hearts of men and women, yet they cannot fathom it, what God has done from beginning to end. And then have a look at verse 14. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. Nothing added to it, nothing taken from it. What God chooses, God chooses, and there's nothing I can do about it. Do you see the relentlessness of this time? And in many ways, it's almost like it's depressing. And to borrow another sort of pop cultural reference, you almost feel like you need to take a Bex and have a good lie down. For those of you old enough to know what a Bex is. I'm one of those, actually. It's almost, you can almost be fatalistic with this passage. What use is there? Let's just give up now. And it actually can be found to occur in questions like when someone knows someone who's died young, and you're tempted to ask, well, why did so-and-so die so young when their full potential was never reached? And as you read Ecclesiastes, the answer seems to come at you, well, God knows, we have no answer. But there is a time for everything. Or you might go to the other extreme and say, well, why did this person who lived such a long life then suffer for so many years at the end in ill health? Wouldn't it have been better if they just went to sleep one night and didn't wake up? To which the answer from Ecclesiastes seems to be, well, God knows why they didn't, and we have no answer, but there is a time for everything. And whilst that is true, it's not always easy to hear, is it? But here's a question. Is that the only way to read Ecclesiastes chapter 3? Or is it possible that in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're starting to get hints of what's going to come later in the book? Are we starting to see hints of chapter 12? Are we starting to see glimpses of God and what His purposes are? You see, here's a good question. Is it bad that God sets the times for things? Is it bad, as it says in chapter 4, verse 14, I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. Well, no, it's not actually, is it? It's actually quite good that the Lord God Almighty is in complete control. That is good as long as, here's the caveat, as long as God is good. And He is. So it is good that God is in complete control. God is not a tyrant. Rather, He is a good God. Whatever He does, nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. But again, it begs the question, you know, why bother though? Why even seek God in prayer? Why bother asking? Well, again, I think that misses what verses 11 and 12 are trying to pick up. Have a look at verse 11 in particular. He, that is God, has made everything beautiful in its time. And He has also set eternity into the hearts of men and women, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I love this verse. I love the depth and richness of this verse. God has made everything beautiful in its time. So please tell me how hate and war and mourning can be beautiful. God, in His wisdom, takes the silk threads sense of eternity in our hearts. Yes, it's true. We cannot begin to fathom it from beginning to end. That doesn't matter. We're actually part of it. And he engages with us and he puts that sense in our hearts. This is not meant to be some fatalistic view. This is not meant to be, you know, to borrow another pop reference, que sera, sera, what will be. No, rather, this is a missional, this is a purposeful journey that we engage with God on. And it's hinted at in verses 12 and 13. Look what the teacher says. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. And get this bit, here's the hint. This is the gift of God. Finding satisfaction in their toil, eating and drinking and doing good. God's good gift to us. God's good gift to us is that he worries about the times. He's the one who weaves the tapestry together, but he weaves us into it with our times of mourning and our times of dancing and our times of grieving and our times of laughter and our times of birth and our times of death are weaved in to this beautiful tapestry. And that is God's good gift to us. He sets not only the times of all humanity, he sets our times. The times of this very day, he sets. So what are we to do? Well, if I'm to pick a hook, as it were, for you to hang this idea on, this is what I would pick. Seize that. Seize the times of this day. The other day I showed my son a movie that I saw as a young man. Probably everyone in the room has seen the movie. If you haven't, you need to watch the movie. My son didn't like it in the end because he said, Dad, there was no resolution to the plot. I said, son, that was the point. The movie was from 1989, Dead Poets Society. And there's this famous scene in the movie, and if you know the movie, you'll know the scene, where it's very early on in the movie, and Robin Williams, the English teacher at this very elite boys' school in the USA, he gathers all the boys together in the sort of the foyer, in the hallway, and he shows them the, you know, those glass cases that have all the trophies and all the old photos, and so he shows them that, and he says, boys, look at the faces on those photos. Look at the names there on those boards and on those trophies. And then in his wonderful way, he just reminds them that they are all now fertilizing daffodils. That's literally what he says. You know, we are food for worms, lads. And then he says, but, you know, if those faces and those names could give you a word of advice, I wonder what it would be. And he says, I wonder if we can actually even hear it. And he sort of plays it up a little bit. And he tells them, lean in close. And so all the boys gather and lean in close to these glass cabinets. And Robin Williams sticks his head in there and starts going, carpet. And the boys all look around, what on earth? Carpet, lean in, carpet. Carpet diem. Seize the day, boys, he says. Seize this day. Ecclesiastes is saying, seize this day, the times of this day that God has said. This is the day that the Lord has made. And he has set this day for each of us to be either a day of mourning or a day of dancing, a day of weeping, or a day of laughter, a day of birth. Maybe a day of death. Everything in between. God has set this day for each of us. And we need to seize that. Not seize it as in a materialistic, self-fulfillment, grandiose sort of way where, you know, it's all about us. know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow that we die. Let's get the best out of it. Or as the young people say, YOLO. If you don't know what that means, you're way too old. No, it's rather a biblical understanding of carpe diem. Seize this day, knowing that this day is God's gift to you. And what will you do with it for his purposes? As it says, verses 11 and 12. Sorry, 12 and 13. I know that this day there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil, but this is the gift of God. What will you do with this day that the Lord has set? And when you get to tomorrow, ask the same question. What will you do with this day and the times that God has set for this day? Will we find satisfaction in living the lives that God has set before us? As Psalm 23, as King David puts in Psalm 23 so beautifully, you know, he leads us to green pastures and quiet waters and on paths of righteousness for his name's sake. This day, will you seize it for him and for his glory? It's a beautiful piece of poetry, this Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And we begin to see the hints of God and wisdom of living for him in the times that he has set.